This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Conversations, though, like that great meeting we had at Tabor Space a couple of weeks ago, is to raise the dialogue and have us all move forward from here and now. That's why this conversation is presented uninterrupted, I think. Kurt, is that right? Okay, uninterrupted. Okay, Lynn, you said you were going to present yourself raw, naked, and exposed. There's a little humor in that, kind of tongue-in-cheek. And I guess the first question I want to ask you is, are you taking this seriously?
I'm taking it extremely seriously. And that's why I was pretty adamant about having a program where I could share information and answer more questions.
Okay. I'm going to start out by asking you, is there anything that's going on with you personally right now that might distract from the larger goals of these conversations tonight and tomorrow night that we can talk about now and get out of the way?
My garden needs a lot more help than I've been able to give it, but I'm fairly focused and have been extremely focused on KBOO for quite some time. Although, you know, it has come to my attention that some folks have posted some personal information about me on Facebook. And so I do want to mention for those people who have seen this that I was charged with a DUI, but I'm in a diversion program because of my immaculate driving record. And no, I wasn't out drinking in bars and carousing around. I had actually been at a KBOO event and was extremely tired putting on a very successful event. But I definitely made a wrong judgment call, thought I could drive home, felt great, and was falling asleep as I approached my house, and really the officer did me a favor. And it's given me a lot to think about. You know, when you come to be my age and you don't have any kind of a record, it's like, what's that about? So I've had the chance to really look at boundaries and how much I put out for organizations, and really trying to look at that and delegate more than I have in the past.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to start out by asking you, other than that, I want to make it clear to the audience who you represent also. Understanding the station navigator, you ideally represent the best interests of the community. And you ideally also represent the best interests of staff and volunteers and riders members. And you're also working to fulfill the responsibilities of our charter as it is represented to state and federal government. But you are an employee that serves at the pleasure of the board. So is it safe to say that you primarily represent the views of the board or not?
Let's see. Do I represent the views of the board?
Mm-hmm.
I certainly do not speak for the board. I work for the board. And the board and I together arrive at lots of decisions, and I assist the board in many things, and I manage the station because the board has delegated that authority and that responsibility for me. So some things I can talk about in relation to the board, but the board really does speak for themselves.
Okay. All right, I want to start out by asking you about the different kinds of professional experience that you have. Okay, you have general nonprofit experience, you have fundraising experience, which is why you were originally hired as a development director.
Yes.
And you have broadcasting experience. Can you talk about each different kind of experience that you have?
Oh, let's see. I have more than 30 years of nonprofit management experience, and that is everything from being a board member to being a development director, a communications director, marketing director, executive director, And I have had my own consulting business where I consulted primarily with boards on strategic planning, project management, project development. So I have covered everything in the nonprofit world, which is a very valuable thing for organizations because I've done it all, I know it all, and it's a good way for me to go into an organization and really be of good assistance.
Okay. So all of your experience basically has been in the nonprofit world.
I have. I can proudly say that I have actually worked for two small businesses, and I have consulted several small businesses with their own business plans and marketing plans, communications plans. But I did work for two small businesses.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the fundraising experience that you have.
Oh, my goodness. I started raising money like even before I had a professional career. I've done grant writing, appeal writing, event planning, major donor solicitations. If it's within the development world, I have done that. So if I go back to my broadcast experience, which was in the 80s, it was a while ago, for a small television, low-power television station, and two radio stations in rural Alaska, I came into that station. I became involved with underwriting, with membership, with telethon-type events, with CPB grant money, with city funding. So again, for federal funding to city funding to all the little pieces that make up fundraising.
Okay. What brought you to KABU?
Well, initially, a friend of mine had suggested applying for the part-time development director position. They knew that I had recently left a position and was looking for part-time work so I could continue my consulting business and working in my garden. And I had wanted to get back into broadcast for some time. I took my broadcast experience from the 5 years of being a station manager, and I have incorporated that in everything I have done since then. Every nonprofit I have worked with, I have inevitably ended up doing public relations, communications, you know, journalism pieces for them. So it's been a passion of mine, and I've kept my hands in it. But when the opportunity for KABU opened up, you know, I still live in St. John's. I've been looking at low-power FM licenses and was working to put a small radio station in the city of St. John's, or the neighborhood of St. John's, if you will. When this opened up, I thought, wow, what a great opportunity to help KABU raise money. And so I applied for the development director position and was hired by the staff collective who was managing KABU at that time.
Okay. So what were you originally hired to do? You were originally hired to do development work. What did that mean for KABU?
Well, it's interesting. For KABU, it meant events, really events, and some major donor work. The way that development is structured here, which Andrew and I, who is the membership director, have been working on, we work very collaboratively now and have merged the development and the membership departments. But really, I was hired to bring in and develop new revenue streams to put together a comprehensive development plan. So I started doing the donor appeals, solicitations, if you will, like the winter appeal, and I just finished the summer appeal, where Andrew was doing those before. I have started to do the events, like the Amy Goodman event or the Once in a Boo Moon event. I took on the events to raise money from that, and Andrew and I together worked up a new way of approaching development here at KABU so that we could start to tap different parts of the community for funding, more small business support, and really start to look at leveraging what we already do to raise money.
Okay. I don't mean to be crass about it, but how much money have you brought into the station through the events that you have put on since you've been development director?
Oh, gosh. This is when I wish I had Debbie, the finance director here. I raise money and I run money in my head all the time. But let's see. I know that, I can say that Amy Goodman was a sold out, tremendous event. I can't remember, honestly, how much money we raised at it. I know that it was a significant amount. I know that we have exceeded our budget line item for donor solicitation because the winter donor appeal was so successful. I know that. I know that the Once in a Boo Moon event was, again, standing room only, sold out event that we made thousands of dollars on. If anything, I am an incredibly frugal person about how I go about spending money that we have and making sure that there is a return on investment, to the point where I know I staff are often tired of me saying, you know, is there a return on investment? So there are those events and those appeals that I can point to. At this point, we have, of course, a number of events. The bulk of the fundraising that we have planned for KBOO is happening over this summer because this is our 45th anniversary, 45th birthday, if you will, and it seems a really good idea to leverage the awareness of that, reminding the community about that. We get double duty out of our marketing when we're talking about our value to the community and raising money on top of it. So we have an event planned June 1st, Breakfast with the Boo at the Matt Dishman Community Center. We have several birthday party events planned after that. And like we're going to be at Good in the Hood, and we have a birthday celebration happening there. So over the course of the summer, you're going to be seeing different events happening. In August, there is a major donor, a special invitation event. The goal is to end the year in the black, actually with a surplus, so that we can start fiscal year 14, which for us starts October 1st, with a really good little nest egg so that we can move forward strongly.
Okay. So suffice it to say that as far as being a development director, you are well qualified to do that, and you have demonstrable goals accomplishments for that.
Yes, I am an extremely accomplished development director. I'm trying to think if there's something I could, you know, as far as grant writing, okay, that was part of my job description and is part of my job description for KBOO. But I have not been able to really focus on grant writing. I had the help of Michael Wells, who submitted a couple of grants for us for the archive project while I've been here. I do have grant plans. In the past, I have been the sole grant writer for an organization I worked for in Seattle. I had in my portfolio some 30 family foundations that I annually solicited money from. This was for a project connected to the Washington Families Fund, which I raised money for, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Along with that, I did a lot of program development and strategy work, which goes hand in hand with grant writing. And the last grant that I wrote for that organization was $60 million for a 7-year program that served and is currently serving 3 counties in Washington.
Okay. So the reason why I asked you all those questions about your job and your experience is because one of the things that came up at the meeting at Tabor Space was people wanted to know, well, who are you? We don't know anything about you. How are you qualified to do the station manager position? Well, now we've had some time to talk about how you were qualified to do the development director position. And now I want to ask you, when did your job change?
My job changed about, it started to change about 2 weeks after I came to KABU. I came to KABU on May 1st, 2012, to be a development director. And the thing that happens when organizations or clients hire me to raise money, to raise funds, is it's not, fundraising is not a standalone thing that you do. You go in, okay, you want me to raise money. How much money do you want to raise? What's it for? What kind of marketing do you do? What kind of programs do you have? What's the messaging? What kind of infrastructure? Is the organization in any danger? What do your finances look like? You do an overall organizational assessment. That's how you approach fundraising. So when I came to KABU, that's what I started doing. I started asking questions. I started looking at financials. I looked at board minutes. I went back historically. I talked to staff. I talked to Andrew. So after the first few weeks, I understood that there was also a staff and board work group that was looking at a new management structure for KABU. KABU had been managed by a staff collective for about 2.5 years, and I wasn't here. I came in at the end of that. I was hired by the collective. And for whatever reason, it was decided that they wanted to have a different management structure. So staff and board were on a committee discussing this. I was new. And it was suggested that I sit on that committee because of my background and experience. So I started participating in those discussions, and it became very apparent to me that one of the overriding things happening at KABU is, you know, some really good staff, amazing volunteers, a lot of super goodwill and intent, but there was no leadership. And without leadership, without someone who has a vision and who has the ability to put all those pieces together, galvanize people, and move things forward, you don't really get very far. That's just my experience. I'm just speaking from my experience. So I met with this committee. That committee decided that, asked me if I would be willing to take the position of an interim station manager, and that's what was brought to the board as a recommendation. I did have unanimous support from the staff and the board to do that. In July, that was brought to the board as a motion. And
July 2011?
Mm-hmm. No, 2012.
Okay.
And I became, in addition to the development director, the interim station manager at that time. And there were some different feelings about what do we call Lynn, because, you know, there have been 20-some managers here at KABU in 20-some years. So not really wanting to take whatever bad juju that was into my role. Someone in the audience at that July board meeting said, Navigator, you should be called the Navigator. And that just really struck me as fitting, because I was going to be really, how I see my role is guiding this big ship, KABU, through turbulent waters, avoiding icebergs, patching some holes, and getting us to a safer harbor where we can be stable and financially sound and grow and expand to meet the needs of the community.
Okay. I had a chance to talk to some of the former board members, and I found out that the changes that the board has made in governance are very different than past boards. I mean, the change that this board made was drastically different than what other boards have done. Past boards have governed with a combination of consensus from staff and managers, volunteers, and to some extent, the community. The big break from that past is mainly the idea of delegating almost total control to one individual. That does go against KABU's philosophy and history, but it is important to say that doing that was a board decision. By giving you that kind of authority, what do you think the board was trying to accomplish?
I think the board, you know, and I can't speak for the board, and people can ask the board this directly, but my feeling about it is that the board was really looking for leadership, that they had felt some frustration with the staff collective. I could see that in the board minutes. I could see that in the documents that I read about that time. The board was well aware of what happened to the station manager before the collective and the history here. So I think that with the counsel of Cynthia Kumpfer, who was the consultant that was hired with the Meyer Memorial Trust grant to train the board, to help them understand their roles and responsibilities, what the board is supposed to do and what it is not supposed to do, what its highest goals and aspirations should be, that it was under that guidance that the board decided that they were going to be a delegating board, and that at least for now, they were going to delegate the majority of the authority to me to carry out certain tasks and certain mandates. I believe fully that they trusted me. I was vetted by the board and staff to do this work, and there were many occasions that as we went through the training process together, because I was with the board throughout the entire board training process, that everyone was very clear what that was going to mean for me and what that was going to mean for them.
Did the board tell you exactly what they wanted you to do and how they wanted you to do it, or did they have a general idea of what they wanted you to accomplish, and they were going to more or less leave the details of how it got accomplished up to you?
It is very much outlined and specifically stated in the board policies, which were adopted in January of 2013 by the board. They are posted on the KABU website. The items that I was asked by the board to do as an interim station manager in July were to look at a new staffing and management structure for KABU, one that could be sustained long term and would help us achieve the goals and objectives outlined in the strategic plan. Those are very specific, and those are in the board minutes, what they asked me to do. So to act as a manager, you know, ensuring that we have money coming in, ensuring that the FCC laws are abided by, and due management. When the board policies were adopted, specifically in there are to develop an employee manual, to bring that to the board, to update it and revise it annually, to hire and terminate individuals, to manage staff thoughtfully, there's a whole list of things you can see in the board policies. They are specific, but they were also designed not to interfere or not on a daily basis, but to leave the management duties up to me, and they were going to stay at strictly a governance level. So there is room for me to do things how I need to or how I see fit with my experience. I probably have more experience than any of the board members in being part of a nonprofit, in running a nonprofit, in counseling a nonprofit, in raising money for a nonprofit, in marketing a nonprofit. So they left those pieces to me.
Some people that I've talked to have said that the board may not have fully realized what it had done by giving you the kind of authority that it gave you. Assume for a minute that might be true. If it is true, did you see it as your responsibility to carry through on the letter of the changes, even if the board didn't fully understand the spirit of the changes?
I believe that the board fully understood the changes that they put in those policies. They were discussed at length. There was very candid and very spirited conversation about those changes. They were as adamant about those changes as they were about making certain that I incorporated the idea of at-will, the policy of at-will employment at KABU. The one thing that I do know, and I expressed this to the board, is that intellectually you can embrace policy changes. You can intellectually get why it's important to do this right now. When it comes to implementing something, it's a whole different thing when you emotionally start to go in a direction and it's like, wow, do you mean it meant this? You mean I can't do this anymore? Or what about my friendship with that person? Or what about my own personal belief here? So there, it's a process. And it happens a lot when you're in change, which that you're right. This was a huge policy shift. I was concerned about it. I still am concerned about it. There was a major donor that offered an individual to help me during this time as a counsel for me. And this was a very, and is, he is a very respected board and business consultant. But I asked that he continue to help the board, that I felt like I was okay because I've had a lot of experience. It was the board that I wanted to have counsel on how to continue to uphold their mandate as a board and to move forward strongly with the policy changes that they had made.
Was there any order in how you went about accomplishing these things that the board wanted you to accomplish? In other words, which was the most important thing that you chose to do first and why?
There was definitely an order to it. When the board accepted their policies, and I will take a step back to say that was another very important piece of the Meyer Memorial Trust grant, was board training, but also KABU policy review and rewrite. Cynthia Comfer, he's a very respected lawyer and put together the Oregon nonprofit book, looked at KABU policies, which you can imagine over 45 years were a big book of policies, some which were outdated, some which were not legal, some which were completely reactionary, some which were convoluted and mismatched. The first thing she did was to pull apart the policies that specifically had to do with board management.
And Lynn, let me just stop you for a second. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It is 7:02 p.m. Okay, Lynn, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. So she pulled apart the policies and set aside the board policies and set to working on them. That was about a third of the KABU policies. The other two-thirds, which included employment policies, human resource policies, operational policies, were set in another pile that landed on Lynn's plate. And when the board adopted their board policies, as you will notice in board minutes, they formally said all the other policies are now null and void and they don't exist anymore. Okay, so for someone like me who's fairly prudent and responsible, that was like, whoa, okay. So one of the tasks going back to July was to put together staffing and management, new structure for KABU. And I had been working on that with consultants. And that's fine, but when you're facing changes like that, and knowing that there would be some employment issues, and that the board had asked me specifically to do an employee manual, that was the first piece of work that I decided to take on with the help of HR consultants, with the help of another consultant that had been helping us with the board policy and board work. And that's what I focused on, were first the employee manual, the policies in HR around that. The other policies, I told the board that I would be working on these in increments, hopefully to have those policies completed by the end of this fiscal year, which is the end of September. I am sad to say that current situations and issues have kind of pulled me away from the policy work.
And when we're talking about situation and issues, let's just be clear that the staff has contacted the Communication Workers of America in an effort to form a union.
Yes.
And so just so for people who didn't know what issues means, I just wanted to clarify that for them. So go ahead.
Yeah, that's a huge, that was a huge unexpected action that came after the employee manual when it was completed being presented to the staff.
Okay. So you move forward with the changes that you were told to make. It seems those changes have delighted some people, you know. Some people have a lot of confidence and hope in those changes. They've horrified other people. The people who are happy with them, who do they represent? And why do you think they're happy with those changes?
I think that people that are happy with the changes at KABU are pretty varied and wide-ranging. I have heard from many volunteers that are thrilled with the changes happening at KABU. I've spoken with many of the old guard, if you will, old station managers, people that were old board members that have tried over and over. Change is not new to KABU. They're happy about the changes. I've talked to many members and community members that have been involved with KABU in the past, maybe are still involved with KABU, but have wanted more for KABU, they're wanting more structure, for more accountability, for more of an open door policy, of a little bit more. The only word is professionalism. I don't mean that we don't have professionalism here, but a little bit more of a level of quality here at KABU. And so I think that those changes are respected by a whole different group in the community.
Likewise, for the people who are unhappy with those changes, why do you think that they are unhappy with the changes?
I think that they're unhappy, if I understood them correctly. There were many at the meeting on the 4th, and I have received numerous phone calls, and people have come and stopped me, just like they stopped me to say, you know, I'm totally behind you. I used to be a development director at KABU. You're doing the right thing. To people that are wow, you know, you're doing the wrong thing. KABU is fine the way that it is. We want to keep KABU KABU. Then they're upset, I think, because of change. Change is scary. I'm not saying that it's not. But change is necessary. Change is the only constant that's there. Maybe I have not been as diligent as I could be in helping people to not be so fearful about this, and I'm sorry about that. But I think it's the change.
Well, what I wanted to say about that is it seems that one of the tensions is the tension between local control and not local control. For instance, one of the issues regarding KABU and money, former boards and former managers wanted to separate KABU from government money because they felt that government money was external control. But even at the Tabor Space meeting, there were people who expressed concern over underwriting, which is all local, because they felt that local money that comes from businesses exerts a level of control over the station that the station doesn't need. So that seems to be one of the tensions that people are struggling with. that may have to do directly with change, but I think also has to do with the station remaining autonomous in the eyes of those people who want it to remain autonomous.
And I completely understand that, and I would wonder why they think that I'm not going to support that, because my efforts in developing different revenue streams go right back to the community. I believe at the root, at the core of any community radio station is the mandate that it serves the community where it resides. In the same breath, I'm going to say that the community then needs to support the community radio station. And I'm never in favor of bringing in outside money or going fishing for some major donor who's outside of the area to support us. The initiatives that I'm working on are really community-based and are encouraging individuals in the community, whether they're individual people or small businesses or organizations here, to support KBOO.
So as an aside, when the station is applying for grants, are those grants local grants? Are they grants offered by the government? Where does that money come from?
The only grants that we have applied for while I've been here are from local family foundations, Oregon foundations. KBOO cannot apply for Corporation for Public Broadcasting money. We don't have the membership, listenership, and revenue to apply for that type of money. There are grants out there that I would really like to apply for that are foundation grants that are specifically for upgrading training curriculum, so that when people came in and were trained to produce radio and be involved with the station at that level, that our curriculum was updated and that there might even be a certification that can be attached to that. Upgrades for equipment, upgrades for a generator, so that if there's some kind of disaster, we're able to stay on the air. I mean, there are grants that we need to apply for that are Oregon, Portland, or if anything, Cascadia region, that we should be applying for to upgrade our facility and our ability to fulfill our mission.
Okay. Do you think you've made any mistakes trying to implement these changes? And if so, how? And if you could, what would you do differently?
I definitely think that I've made some mistakes. I'll be the first one to admit mistakes. I am a very ambitious person. Staff and volunteers and the board know this. I have a vision, you know. I have a dream, and I believe so strongly in that dream and that vision of KBOO and how it can serve this region and this town that I push really hard. Anybody who knows me also knows that I take on a lot. I think I'm invincible. If my DUI was anything, it proved to me that I am not invincible. And I work on a lot of things all the time, and I don't rest very often. So have I made mistakes? Yes. I would say that in the employee manual, that the counsel and advice that I got, if I had not been working so much on so many pieces, because I'm doing literally two recognized jobs, but there are three or four other jobs that I'm doing because we don't have anyone else here at KBOO to do them, that I would have reconsidered the extent of some of those benefit cuts. I think I would have had the time to more thoughtfully look at that. Yes. Would I You know, would I change that now? Yes, and I intend to. It's when we rolled out that employee manual, I stated over and over again, this is a living document. This is a first draft. It needs improvement. There will be pieces added to it. There are pieces that are missing, but it's the first piece. We needed to get that first piece in.
The board hired you on a contract, is that right?
It's written as an implied contract, yes. I was given until February of 2014 to put together a new management staffing structure to develop a comprehensive development plan, which we're currently in the midst of implementing, to diversify revenue streams, to stabilize KBOO. This was a request from individuals on the management team and myself to give me at least a year and a half to implement those changes. Anyone who understands what real development work is knows that you just can't come in and do something and generate instant cash, especially when you don't have the infrastructure to raise the money. Simple things like writing thank you letters to individuals who contribute to KBOO was missing. That's an integral part of a development department. You should have seen the look on my face when Andrew said, well, no, we don't send letters. We send membership cards. And from my school, you and my experience, you thank people. Whether they give you a dollar or they give you $5,000, you thank them.
Well, I have to tell you that that sounds like something that would be very good for development. But according to some of the staff here, especially the news directors that we have, they're not allowed to write, because of the new employee manual, they're not allowed to write letters of recommendation thanking employees, thanking volunteers, so that they can then take those letters on to other employers and use it as part of their resume.
It's the idea of the employee manual, the idea of having structure in an organization that has been structureless, is so that you can have accountability, so that you can actually make sure that things get done, so that you have clear lines between roles and responsibility. Whether you're a board member, whether you're a staff person, whether you're an executive director, there have been a couple of letters recently that I've been asked about, that I've authorized the writing of, that I actually laid out on letterhead and signed for an individual that was brought to me by the interim program director that we have. It's not that I'm saying you can't do those things. It's that in an organizational structure, it usually is, and now we have, like it or not, a top-down structure. Right now, not saying that it's going to remain that way, but right now it's like that. In the nonprofit world, or the corporate world, if you will, it is the executive director who signs that, or at least knows about it, because ultimately I'm responsible. If Janka wants to write a letter for someone...
And just for those who don't know, Janka Soderberg is the evening news director here at KBOO.
Yeah, if she gets a person who needs a letter... Of course, I don't know this person. I haven't worked with them. It's like, great, sounds good, do this, happy to sign it. There was a request from an email that came from Juneau, Alaska. Someone who volunteered for KBOO is up there applying. I don't know this person. I transferred the email to Jenk. I said, do you know this person? Can you follow up on this for me? It's just kind of who does what. It's so that things get done. It's so that things don't fall through the cracks.
I had asked you earlier about, you know, the implied contract that the board has with you. And at the Tabor Space meeting, you know, there were a couple of people who, you know, called for you to leave the station. Do you know whether or not the board is going to let you serve out your contract or break it and fire you?
I actually have no idea. I am working very hard on doing the job that I was hired to do. And I feel like I've done a really good job. I have made some mistakes. For the most part, when I talk about feedback, when I look at and listen to that recording, when I see the emails that are coming in, I think that there are more people in favor of what the board and myself are trying to do here at KBOO, and that's important. The initiatives that I'm working on right now tie directly to the achievement of goals and objectives to the strategic plan, whether it's fundraising goals, whether it's awareness. Two that we're currently working on are, there's in the strategic plan, it's that there should be training about membership, that the membership doesn't understand what really their membership is, what it means. So Andrew and I are putting together a booklet about membership. At every event in June, July, and August, up to the annual meeting and the board elections, we are educating people about the value of membership, what it means, get involved, what it doesn't mean, all of those pieces. We're educating people about becoming a board member. There's a whole new packet on the review process. If you want to become involved with the board, what that really means, that's incredibly important. The amount of media sponsorships with a little bit of tweaking to that program, we have had almost 100 media sponsorships reaching hundreds of people, thousands of people throughout Portland and Oregon that are building our constituencies, that are creating more memberships, that are building listenership. The recent conference that I went to in Ashland, which is resulting in the Oregon Community Media. This was a group of community radio stations that met. How do we network? How do we partner? How do we succeed? Because the world is different than it was when KBOO started. And these are little stations, 5 watts, 10 watts. Bend, I think, has 80 watt station. So I was there. I've been talking internally about more locally, regionally relevant programming. That's the only kind of programming change I've ever brought up. And I brought that to this group of community radio stations, about a dozen, that how about we try and create statewide news, with the goal being an hour of community-based radio news every day. Well, we're going to start with a monthly program, and we're going to pilot that in August. All the radio stations are going to contribute. KBOO is going to produce that, and it's going to go out on the airwaves and be rebroadcast. We're sharing all of our underwriting information. Whether people don't like that or not, that's a viable way for small community radio stations, little 10-watt stations like KBOO started as, to reach out to the local businesses, get support for their efforts, and stay on the air.
So it sounds like what you're doing is establishing a network.
It's a complete network, and that network branches out throughout Oregon. And that is part of the KBOO strategic plan. The biggest thing in that strategic plan was that KBOO said, we want to be a media center. A media center. There wasn't any plan for it. There wasn't any plan for how to raise the money for it. But if I know how to do one thing, it's network. And I believe in the strength of partnerships and reaching out across communities. So when I went down there, and all of a sudden we were talking about co-creating programming, we're going to jointly look for funding and get a reporter in Salem so that we have legislative news going out to all the community radio stations. What the one super exciting thing is, KBOO has always broadcast the Waterfront Blues Festival. This is, we've been doing it longer than anybody. And I suggested that maybe these community radio stations could rebroadcast that signal, pick up that signal on the second stream and rebroadcast it in their own communities, raising awareness about the Oregon Food Bank for their own food bank locations in those little communities. These are rural Oregonians. These are Southern Oregon. They're Eastern Oregon. And so I came, they loved the idea, and I came back and I wrote the Blues Festival people that we work with, and I suggested, can we do this? And there's going to be some logistics, and we're going to have to get permission from the performers. But if we can do this, people all over the state of Oregon are going to be hearing parts of the Blues Festival rebroadcast in Cottage Grove, in Ashland, in Astoria, and they're going to be raising awareness about hunger in our state. And KABU is assisting in doing that. That's what KABU has the ability to do. That is so powerful, because you are building community and you are building networks. And for all of those media sponsors that we helped, whether it's Portland Tyco, whether it's Friends of Trees, whether it's Alliance for Democracy, all those people, all their members, all their events have touched hundreds of people who now know about KABU, who support KABU, who listen to KABU, and are going to help us as we move into the future. This is a time in this world where it's all about relationship, where it's all about networking, it's all about partnerships, and it's all about local. It's all about local.
Well, the original question was, do you think the board will fire you? And it sounds like
It
sounds like you've given the audience a lot to consider regarding that question.
I have done my job to the best of my ability. I've done a really good job. I continue to support the board and hope that we can get through this together. There's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of money to be raised. So I don't know, Don.
Okay. I just want to let people know we're just about to the end of the hour-long interview portion of the conversation with Lynn Fitch. The next half hour is going to be questions, and we already have a big old stack of questions. If you have a question that you want to ask, call the question line at 503-231-8187. And the very capable board operator, Kurt Lauer, will take your questions, and they'll be fed into us, and then we will answer them for you. We're sort of separating this out so that the first night we're talking about a group of issues, and then tomorrow night we're going to talk about another group of issues. Tonight, so far, we've talked about Lynn and her experience. We've talked about board function, and we've talked a little bit about KABU's responsibility to the larger community. Tomorrow night, my hope is that we are able to talk about staff, our legal relationships, and our responsibility to the community with capital C. So right now we wanted to sort of go to some of the questions, but do we need to go to any kind of break or anything? Let's take a little break, and we'll come back in about a minute or so. So you're listening to KBOO in Portland.
Times like these, when night surrounds me and I am weary and my heart is warm, when the songs they're singing, they don't mean nothing, just cheap refrains play on and on. The storm is here, the lightning flashes between commercials, they're taking names, the singers run, just another link in slavery's chain. See the storm clouds rise above me. The sky is dark and the night has come. I walk alone along this highway where strangers gather one by one.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 7:29. We'll be right back in just a moment.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Creative Music Guild's second annual Improvisation Summit, Friday, May 31st and Saturday, June 1st at Sandbox Studio. 2 days of exciting performances featuring local artists and William Hooker from New York City. Performers include Golden Retriever, Daniel Menchie, Battle Hymns and Gardens, 1939 Ensemble, and more. Also, there will be workshops, panel discussions, dance, as well as film performances presented by Cinema Project and Experimental Film Festival. The Creative Music Guild is a locally based nonprofit dedicated to presenting adventurous music from the worlds of jazz and experimental avant-garde since 1991. For more information, go to creativemusicguild.org or ask at the information table when you attend the Improvisation Summit on May 31st and June 1st at the Sandbox Studio located at 420 Northeast 9th Avenue in Portland.
Okay, I'm Don Merrill, and I'm interviewing Lynn Fitch. Lynn Fitch is the station navigator here at KBOO. We've spent the last hour talking about Lynn's experience, the board's responsibility to station community and staff, and now we're going to spend this half hour talking about some of the questions that people have called in. I just want to make a clarification. I said that tomorrow the program is going to be from 6 until 7. We'd be talking about other issues regarding this same universe of issues tomorrow, but it's not going to be from 6 until 7. It's going to be from 7 till 8. Labor Radio is not preempted, and neither is Prison Pipeline. So my mistake. That was my mistake. Okay, so now we have a stack of questions, and the phones are still ringing, and it would be nice if they rang like this at the pledge drive, but they are ringing. I mean, they're really busy. We've got a lot of people answering the phone. So I just want to start out with a question from a former KBOO member, Ben Hoyne. And he wants to ask a question about unionization. Lynn, his question is, how does unionization affect the ability to modify staff hours to better reflect the needs of KBOO moving forward?
Well, I wish I had an answer for that question. But I don't, because we have yet to move into negotiations. Madeline and I have yet to move into that space. And having never negotiated that from that standpoint with the union, I'm not sure. I am hopeful that the union will take all the information that I've collected, all of the assessments that I've done prior to me, looking at the place where KBOO is right now financially, where it has been talked about for years, the need for some staffing shifts. And really my goal was to eventually have more staff being paid better. So I'm optimistic that we're going to get to that.
I've got a couple of questions related to that. The corporation that is KBOO, is in this process of you know, working out staff desires for a union. As the person that the board has delegated, you know, to be part of that negotiation with the CWA, how do you think the union will or will not serve the KBOO Foundation? Serve first.
Well, I guess I'm going to take a step back, and that I don't believe that either the board, who is the board for the KBOO Foundation, or myself had any indication that the staff would want to unionize. I have heard that staff wanted to unionize in the past, but I was unaware of this. In the structure that the board has in their policy, when we received the letter, when I received, it was addressed to me as management, the letter to from the staff with their desire to unionize and be part of the CWA, that was my role here as management to address that issue, which I did. And being responsible and representing the employer, which is the KABU Foundation,
right,
sought information, legal counsel, as to how we can best work with the union. Because KABU has always been for workers' rights, has always been pro-union. This was now, okay, KABU is an employer, so what do we do? To me, it was responsible and due diligence. I sought counsel, and on behalf of the board, as management, because that was my role. And in that, was given certain advice in the beginning by our regular legal help, Sussman Shanks, which is our employment counsel, has been for some time, and they advised me. And then when the election petition came from the union through the NLRB, we received, they suggested that we seek particular labor-focused counsel, and their best recommendation was Bullard Law. So at that time...
Now, I want to stop you because I want to talk about that a little later.
Okay.
But the question was, how does management and board feel that the union will serve the station? And then how does the union and board feel like the union will not? Because obviously there was a feeling, there's a natural adversarial relationship. It's a natural relationship between management and staff. So... clearly, if management feels there is no need for a union and staff does, then that's the adversarial relationship. So then, mm-hmm. and that doesn't necessarily make it bad. It just makes it natural in labor relations. That's just what happens. So I guess the question I'm asking is how, in this position that the station now has in supporting of the union, how does the station feel that the union will help the station? That's my question.
Now.
Yes.
Well, I am trusting that the union is going to bring structure and better representation for the staff in achieving the benefits and the pay scale that they believe that they aren't getting. And it's unfortunate because that was part of the management plan that has yet to be rolled out, but I'll be working with the union, you know, hand in hand to move that piece forward.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit now about some of KABU's relationships, legal relationships, and some of the consultancy. First, has the station ever been sued regarding employment-related issues, things that it should have been doing but hasn't been doing? And did the station and the board make changes to try to prevent that from happening subsequently?
You know, being new to KABU and, you know, reviewing some of the documents, it is my understanding that KABU was sued by a prior employee. I do believe that some of the issues were, having actually never read that file, I can't say that for certain. That would be hearsay, so I won't comment on that. But KABU has been sued before, and I think that that was part of the reason for the board being very specific about being an at-will, openly at-will organization, and for giving a specific purpose or person the authority to hire and terminate the staff that they would be managing and overseeing.
Briefly, talk about the difference between for cause and at-will employment for people who don't know.
At-will, Oregon is an at-will state. It, at the bottom line, means that there does not have to be any cause, that an employer can release you from employment for no reason at all. That's the basic piece of it. For cause usually means that there's a grievance policy, perhaps, or an appeal process, or there are different documentation. There's different documentation that has to happen as warning before you can then terminate an employee. Those are some of the pieces. The part that I believe, on behalf of the foundation, you have to think what keeps the foundation safe. As you said, it's the employer. So in many cases, and why a lot of nonprofits and a lot of corporations in many states go to at will, is it reduces the chance of wrongful termination, lawsuits, it reduces that. I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong. What I'm giving you is my understanding of that.
Tell me the station's relationship with Sussman Shanks.
That they have been employment counsel for us for a number of years. I have used them as I worked on job descriptions and different scenarios of legally how to lay people off in a restructuring process.
Okay. And why is having a specific way of laying people off in a restructuring process important?
It's important because it's, for one thing, it's thoughtful, because laying anyone off, having done it before and having been laid off, it's a very difficult thing to do, and you want it to be thoughtful, you want it to be well thought out, and you want it to be legal, so that all aspects of it you have taken into consideration, so that the staff person that you're laying off is, you know, because laying off is different than firing. Laying off means that individuals can receive unemployment. They're usually given a severance package. Their benefits are carried for a couple of months. They are eligible for COBRA, things like that.
Right.
It also protects the employer from a wrongful termination suit or a discrimination suit. So I am extremely thorough. I think I drive people crazy because I really answer to two parties here at KABU. I am close to the staff. It has been difficult working with staff that I respect a great deal in this kind of atmosphere. But I am also hired. I am the staff person of the board. The board are the only ones who can hire and or fire me. And so I watch out for their best interests, them being the foundation. They are the people who protect the foundation. So I'm doing that kind of balancing act when I'm approaching any of this.
People have blamed you for choosing Bullard Law. And I wanted to just have you describe Bullard Law just briefly, and then I have a follow-up to the question.
When it became apparent that Sussman Shanks did not have the experience or qualifications necessary for union negotiations and or labor law. They recommended, Bullard Law was their recommendation, knowing, because they know KABU. They know our issues. They know our culture. They know our people. They recommended Bullard Law to us. They set up an initial consultation for KABU. That consultation included myself and three board members, including the board president. We spent 2 hours with a representative of Sussman Shanks and Bullard Law. They went through everything having to do with the letter that we had been given, the petition for election, what could precede negotiations, you know, being very clear that at all times we were supportive of the staff's right to choose to unionize or not. But both of them were very clear in explaining the difficulties that might arise for the foundation. They know our financial standing. They know through their experience bringing in a third party can add a level of complication. It kind of goes without saying that it's going to take more time and resources than for somebody to make one decision. You're bringing in a whole different party. I could be wrong on that, but doing some other research, I think that that's true. So they were very careful in explaining the financial ramifications of this. They both were very informed about the fact that the board had directed me to create a new management structure, to look at staffing changes. They had, in closed session, been apprised of some of my thinking and draft proposals. So there was an understanding of we're in the midst of change here, and what was that going to mean?
Well, the rest of the question was, you know, for people who saw that the station had chosen Bullard Law, you know, those people felt that it had a reputation of being a union breaking firm, and it was a bad choice for being part of the negotiation with the union. I mean, I understand that the choice of the firm was on the recommendation, you know, of another firm, which the station has been working with for years. But I think the question that people had was, specific people, the question they had was, knowing KABU's history with leftist politics and its openness, its dedication to democracy, why did you and the board choose what some people considered an expensive firm with an unfriendly history to unions? I mean, many people have asked, couldn't the station have found a firm that was friendlier to union organizing? But other people have said, it's a negotiation. It's a naturally adversarial dynamic because it has to be. So I guess my question is it unreasonable to assume that both sides of a negotiation should think the same way?
Well, I don't think that they're going to think the same way. If they think the same way at all, it's that both parties realize they need legal counsel. The union has legal counsel, and we have legal representation. KABU has legal representation as well. There is a point of timeliness here, that an urgency that I think some people are unaware of. When we received the petition of election, which came through the from the NLRB, that means the clock is ticking. That is a federally mandated process. You don't step out of those guidelines. It's like working with the FCC. So when I receive that and I'm like, okay, I contact Sussman Shanks, that's a Friday. The weekend happens. We aren't able to get in to see, and they're like, well, we don't have the experience to handle this. We've got to recommend someone. The clock is still ticking. I trust Sussman Shanks, the the foundation has trusted Sussman Shanks for years. Why would I think they were going to direct me wrongly? I don't believe that. So the clock is ticking. To their best knowledge and recommendation, they recommended Bullard Law. I didn't see anyone at that table, myself, the board treasurer, a board member, or the board president, raise any issues with the representative from Bullard Law about them being a union-busting firm. I was going on the recommendation, the clock was ticking, forms needed to be filed, we needed to respond, we needed the best information that we could get to fully understand what was going to happen to the best that we could, and what that meant to the foundation, and what that meant to future negotiations. I did hire Bullard Law. We have a retainer with them. It was not to negotiate. Bullard Law is not stepping in for me to negotiate when Madeline, when it comes to that after the election, they were hired to help me fill out forms.
And who's, just to say, who is Madeline again?
Madeline is the executive director from the CWA who was on the labor show last week, who is the person who spoke at the May 4th meeting and the one that I will be sitting down to negotiate with.
Okay.
I don't believe she will be bringing their legal firm in. At this point, Madeline doesn't even talk to me. Our two lawyers, the union's lawyer and our lawyer, are talking to one another. And we voluntarily said, now we will recognize the union. Okay, I don't sit idly by. I've been taking in information. I've been listening to people. I listened to staff, did some more research. It's okay, well, we're going to go ahead. I trust this process, and the union is still going to hold the election on May 30th. Our two lawyers, at this point, the union isn't firing their lawyer, and we aren't firing Bullard Law, because I'd have to find some other lawyer to step in and do this. And right now, we have a retainer. We're not spending any more money on them. Once we get to the election part, then it's Madeline and I negotiating, and both the lawyers step out of it. It's just part of this process that we're in right now. And I actually have to say, you know, as far as well-rounded information, I have received really sound information from both Sussman Shanks and Bullard Law. And I don't see any issue in that. I imagine that, well, the 30th is coming up here pretty darn quick. Unless the union changes its mind and wants to not have the election, that could change things. But you see, that would involve a legal agreement that would come from their law firm to our law firm. And then Madeline and I would probably see this if it existed or if it happens, and then we would talk about that. Then it would go back to the law firms, and then we'd get it back.
Yeah.
When you're in this situation, that's just how it works. You know, is that something I would have done differently? Boy, with the time constraints and the issues and with everything else going on, you know, this is, as I said before, this is an unexpected thing for board, as far as I know, staff, and for myself. We are 2 weeks away from a huge kickoff birthday celebration and fundraising. We need to raise money. Our focus on fundraising was the next 4 months. We have a board election coming up. I'm doing my best to navigate those union waters. I have done a responsible, prudent, and sound job there.
That was the question about Bullard Law. That came from Jamie Partridge. And there was another question, which has to do with current employees. And partly, I guess, it would be sort of connected to the union negotiations. The job descriptions as they exist now, are they going to be looked at or changed as part of the negotiation with the CWA?
Well, I haven't been able to talk to Madeline about that, and it's interesting because the current job descriptions that staff have are the job descriptions that they actually kind of developed for themselves during the staff collective time.
And when was the staff collective?
That was prior to my being appointed the station manager and the prior like 2 1/3 years before this, before July 2012.
And briefly,
after Arthur, the last station manager, left, it was a staff collective.
And briefly, explain what the staff collective is and why it lasted, you know, 2 3/4 years.
Well, since I only came in at the tail end of it, my understanding is that when the last station manager left, that the staff asked to manage themselves as a collective. And during that time,
the staff asked the board.
Yes, to self-manage. And I have seen documents where they took all of the station manager's tasks and divided them up amongst themselves and added them to their job descriptions. So what we have now are some really interesting job descriptions because they have manager duties and they have old duties. And in the case of the interim program director, I haven't ever seen a job description that includes all of the things that she does, because that job, took on all kinds of things. But during the collective, they all took on different tasks and added those to job descriptions. So whether the union will want to use those job descriptions or whether they will be interested in seeing updated job descriptions for the positions that we have, which are what has been a great deal of the work I've been doing in the past months, I'm hopeful that they will, because, you know, in 2008, when we had an assessment by the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, they were pointing out the need for an updated staffing structure. So this is not something I dreamt up. This has been something that people have worked on and wanted to do, that the station has known needed to be done. And so here we are. I hope they're going to look at that. You know, we have 2 interim positions, and the interim positions need to go to an open hire. That's part of and it's an FCC side note that they have reminded us about, that we cannot have interim employees for a great length of time. And the staff collective knew about those interim positions, but though they never went to an open hire. So those are 2 things that need to be addressed, especially as we move into our license renewal year. And June 1st is the first date of our public notice for comment on the renewal of KBOO's broadcasting license.
And just talk a little bit about that. Now, the way I understand the way these public comment periods work in the lead up to the renewal of a station's license, if anyone in the public is upset with the way the station has operated, they can file a complaint, and that complaint is seriously considered by the FCC. The FCC does not play around with those things.
You are correct, and it is a concern to me, a great concern. I believe it's a great concern for the board. It should be a great concern to the membership who feels so passionately about the station. And I guess that goes back to, why I am hoping to set people's fears aside, why I'm hoping to answer people's questions so that we can get back together, work on common goals, and get KBOO strengthened and ready for this renewal year.
Okay. Well, Lynn, we've had a good conversation for the first hour. We did the interview. For the last hour, we took questions. And tomorrow, we'll be doing the same thing from 7 until 8. First half hour of covering the rest of the issues, money, community, and then the last half hour taking more questions. So thank you for your time. And KBOO listeners, thank you for your attention. This is KBOO Portland.
Wise men say only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you. Shall I?
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from STG Presents, bringing London-based indie band The XX to Schnitzer Hall on Monday, May 27th. Tickets for this all-ages show are available at the PCPA box office or online at Tickets West. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, 100.7 FM, Corvallis in Albany. The time is 8 o'clock straight up.
And Cody, you are live on air.
Yes, a kookaburra bird is what I have an impersonation of.
Oh, this is wonderful. Kookaburra.
They're also from Australia.
That's right.
Yes, okay, ready?
Yes, we are ready. That was amazing. That was. We don't know what to say about that, except thank you.
Thank you.
Tune in to The Confessional with 2 solid hours of conscience cleansing radio. Sundays at midnight, only on KBOO FM Portland.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Creative Music Guild's 2nd Annual Improvisation Summit, Friday, May 31st and Saturday, June 1st at Sandbox Studio. 2 days of exciting performances featuring local artists and William Hooker from New York City. Performers include Golden Retriever, Daniel Menchie, Battle Hymns and Gardens, 1939 Ensemble, and more. Also, there will be workshops, panel discussions, dance, as well as film performances presented by Cinema Project and Experimental Film Festival. The Creative Music Guild is a locally based nonprofit dedicated to presenting adventurous music from the worlds of jazz and experimental avant-garde since 1991. For more information, go to creativemusicguild.org or ask at the information table when you attend the Improvisation Summit on May 31st and June 1st at the Sandbox Studio located at 420 Northeast 9th Avenue in Portland.
Solar Eye. You are listening to Music Without Borders. I'll be here until 10 o'clock. And I'll be posting the playlist at kboo.fm. If you click on archives and then click on recent playlists, you will see. As I post, it will be going up there. And you can also like Music Without Borders on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/musicwithoutborders, KBOO. Click like and you will get links to past shows as well as the playlist and other goodies up there for your musical pleasure. Okay, we'll